All right, instead of going down like the Q&A debrief standard race recap that most people do, like I said earlier on, we're going to actually ante it up because we can and it's fun and it's the first rule of Master of Some, which is there's no rules. And I know I just took that from Fight Club and that's corny, but it's true. I don't give a fuck whatever standard-ish you think a podcast is supposed to sound like. I'm going to break that, and I'm going to break that going into next season and the season after because this is my sh-ish and Phil-ish too. But
it's mainly Darren-ish.
What is up? I'm Darren, your co-host of Master of Some, a podcast about health and fitness served up as a metaphor for life. If this is your first time listening or you haven't already, please, please hit the subscribe or follow button or whatever you use to listen to us. Make sure that you get alerts when a new episode comes out. We are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Acast, and a few others. Also, please rate us on whatever app you use and leave a comment. Second to last, if you like any of the music that you hear, you can add it to your device playlist by going to masterofsomepod.com/music and share that out to all your friends. Lastly, send this podcast or your favorite episode to someone that you think would get some value out of this, as the more people that hear about us, the doper stuff we can do to then help other people, and then the cycle continues forever. Please note, there is a language warning as we sometimes cuss/curse, and I'd hate to put you in an awkward moment if we slip up and use some adult bad words.
Welcome into the last episode of this season. We are out of Ultra on this one, and this is a cool one, or at least we think it's cool, because we're actually going to be, you know, obviously the standard Q&A that we do, the interview style where we talk about being experts on being an expert, but we're actually going to go back to little pieces from the last five episodes of the season and go, hey, how do you feel about that now, Phil? That thing that you said, you know, a few weeks ago or a few months ago. How do you feel about that after the race?
It's going to be horrible.
So we didn't do too much prep on this. We usually do a lot of prep. But, yeah, we'll see how this goes. We did leave the last episode on a cliffhanger. So we got to resolve that tension. Can't leave tension going. People get stressed out. So, Phil, what happened? What happened at the end of the race?
So
sum it up.
So, very, very briefly, I think I mentioned last episode, I kind of smashed my quads, and then there was that 8K downhill run at Kadumba, which I smashed my quads even further. And basically, the last 10K of the race, I had to fairly well walk it. Like, just my running was kind of painful to the point of not injury painful, but just muscle damage. Like I felt like if I ran, it might cause some kind of like tear or spray, like something could go wrong. And to be honest, it was painful to the point where my run was no faster than it was like dad's running in a car park when they can't remember where they parked the car and they think it's stolen.
Yeah. That's a good one.
It's like a shuffle that's not quite a run, and it was no faster than honestly just having a bit of a march.
Yeah.
So it turned into a march in the last 10K, in the dark, which was fine. And look, the tall and short of it is I didn't make the under 14 hours. Sort of 14 and a half.
I'm sorry, man.
Oh, look, it's fine. That was a goal. Like, you go into a race, and people who go into any race and say they don't have a time expectation in mind are psychos or liars.
They just want to finish with a smile on their face, Phil.
They are lying.
Don't hate on the general public.
No, they're lying. Every last one of them. Everyone who goes into a race has some number in mind.
Fair.
And if you don't... Anyway, so
I'm with you. No, because you drill down on people and they're like, oh, you know, blah blah blah.
No, they just don't. Yeah. They don't want to put it out there, and that's fine. And they might want to keep it secret, and that's fine too. Or they might want to talk about it for six episodes on a podcast and then not do it.
I honestly don't think you talked about the belt buckle. I think you told me that. I don't think we actually talked about your time. No, you
right?
did early on.
I'm sure did. I did. I'm sure. Yeah.
Spoiler. Anyway. I don't think I listened after one time.
Yeah,
so I don't remember some of that. I actually go like, wait, we said that in an episode? I'm like, yeah, holy
I know,
shit.
I know. Well, this whole episode's that, right? It's like you it's springing shit I said. Yeah, no, it's fine. Honestly, like I had the goal in mind. It would have been nice. But if I felt if it was a mental failure, I would have been more disappointed with myself. You know, I felt like, apart from the, you know, the training failure of not doing enough downhill, which caused the thing. So it was a planning failure. Like, it's all on me. Like, I could have done it if I'd have trained differently.
Self accountability.
Yeah, if I'd have trained differently, if I'd have executed differently, then I could have done it. If I go back again, I'm sure I could do it. So there's nothing that I don't feel any great need to go back again anytime soon. I might do. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. But yeah, no, I didn't make it, but I'm okay with that.
Cool. You told me something about getting bored earlier and how it was long and how you would have done something differently. So actually, sorry, that was the other question. Tell me a little bit more about like it being boring and was there anything you would have done differently? What do you think you did correctly? I know you touched on that. So maybe just like a quick summary of that. About the board thing. Ignore those two questions.
The boring is more the style of racing for that long. It feels less like race. And this probably just speaks to my level, because if you're fast, I'm sure it's racing. Yeah.
Like, was it Killian?
Yeah, if you're Killian Jornet or you're, you know, you're Brendan Davies or you're whoever, like you're Scott Jurek, you're racing. But. And even the guys and girls who are super fast, who, you know, ended up coming in the top 10, they're all racing the race. It didn't feel like a race to me. It just felt like a war of attrition, which was fine. But I think I'm more suited to kind of the 50K distance, which feels more like racing to me, which, I mean, it's still a long-ass run. But that actually feels like I can race the whole thing and I can run it. And this just didn't feel as exciting to me as a style of racing. So that's all. Just a preference thing. Some people love it. I get it. And I'm not done with it.
That was actually my next question. Would you do it again? I think it's funny because when we talked, we did a debrief a few weeks ago.
You
were at my house and you said, it's boring. I don't want to do it again. And then in that same breath, you went, I want to do it again because I don't want to do it again. And I was like, what?
Well, it's not, one is not a trend, right? Like, so
what do you mean one is not? Oh.
I don't have multiple data points. I have one data point, right?
So, oh, you scientist, you.
Well, I don't know that ultra racing is boring. I don't know that 100Ks are boring. I know this one was kind of boring.
Yeah.
So, but that's I could race the next one and it could be an entirely different experience. So that's like trying one pizza and deciding you hate pizza.
I always say I try everything twice. You know, everyone's like, try everything once. I'm like, you gotta do it twice.
Yeah.
It's totally different, you know, like, and the second time you know what to expect. So it could be better, awesome, worse, you know, like.
That's right. So I think there's, I'm almost certain over the course of my life, I'll do it at least one. I'll do that sort of distance at least once more. Cool. Like, whether I do it next year, whether I just decide, forget, I'm going to go back and go under 14 hours because I think I'll have a better strategy and I'll know what I'm letting myself in for, or whether I leave it a few years or whatever, or just do a completely different race, whatever the case might be. I'm pretty sure I'll do it again at some point. But because one is not a trend, right? One is just, this one was boring.
What's your sweet spot with racing, with these trail racing? Do you have one? Is the 50K your sweet spot? Is it 22.2K, whatever that?
I think 50K is a good sweet spot.
Because you've done a bunch of those, right?
Yeah, a gang of them now. Yeah. I quite enjoy that distance. It doesn't seem like a big deal to me anymore. Like, 50K, like, I did like two 50K races in pretty quick succession. It just doesn't, I quite like it.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, instead of going down like the Q&A debrief standard race recap that most people do, like I said earlier on, we're going to actually ante it up because we can and it's fun. And it's the first rule of Master of Some, which is there's no rules. And I know I just took that from Fight Club and that's corny, but it's true. I don't give a fuck. Whatever standard shit you think a podcast is supposed to sound like, I'm going to break that. And I'm going to break that going into next season, the season after. Because this is my shit, and Phil's shit too. But
mainly Darren's shit.
I give zero fucks. So let's have fun
shits.
With it. Or two shits, yes. Yeah, so go back to episode 5 for that one. So with all that said, let's actually go back in time. Ooh, got the the going back in time sound effect. Yeah, I gotta find that one.
The Wayne's World one.
That's it. Let's do it.
Amazing. I think I've waited all my life for that.
So we're going back in time 2 months before, in a world and a place, Phil's attic, where we record most episodes and revisit the past
studio. It's an official studio.
It is a studio. We revisit the past 5 episodes from this season. Some of our very confident statements.
Some of my nonsense.
And see if they hold water after the race.
Spoiler alert, it doesn't.
Actually, I think they do.
Episode 1.
I completely agree, and that sort of ties into the next part, which is kind of dragon slaying. It gives you a dragon to slay, and you know, if you listen to like Jordan Peterson has some great points to make on this. Like this seems to be hardwired into the zeitgeist of kind of human culture, the overcoming obstacles, having adversity, having difficulty, overcoming and growing as a person while you do. It seems to be fundamental to human nature. We seemed hardwired to do that. So I think having a healthy dragon to slay is kind of part of my why, for sure. And part of that is sharpening my motivation to push myself in training. You know, exactly as you were saying before, if I had no specific goal, would I go out and do a 6-hour training run? Probably not, but will going out and doing a 6-hour training run take me to some places that I've not been before? Will it push me out of my comfort zone? Will it force me to do something difficult? And will I grow as a person? Yeah.
Phil, you just talked about slaying the dragon and it breaking you, or seeing if it's going to break you.
Yeah.
Did it?
Physically, yes. Mentally, no. So I'm going to give that a no, it didn't. I mean, I didn't finish in an awful, awful time either. Like, I still came in the top, 20% of the race, I think? Something like that, like in terms of finishing positions.
20th place?
No, percent.
Percentile, so yeah. 80th percentile, right?
Whatever you want to flip. Yeah. So no. And I felt mentally strong the whole way around. And honestly, if my legs were cooperating, I would have run the rest of the way. So yeah, physically it broke me down, but I felt mentally strong. So no, it didn't break me. And I didn't want to stop at any point.
Cool.
So
I really do love how you said that from the first episode, that clip. Because it goes back to our whole Stoic Ways, which is the last episode from season 1. I think it was just called Stoicism.
Yeah.
/ Fear Setting. And I've been deep diving into suffering. And I did a blog post about joy versus happiness. Mm. How joy is the long-sustained suffering. And happiness is the short, in my definition, happiness is the short match. So then I realized that suffering leads to purpose. So you then wanting it to see if it breaks you going through the suffering, it gives you purpose. It gives everyone purpose. So I really do appreciate you doing that.
Yeah. I'm not sure I... Yeah, anyway. Yeah, cool.
Do you agree? Disagree? Do you understand?
I'm not going to get into the whole...
It's semantics.
Metaphysical semantics about the meaning we put behind purpose and suffering and stuff like that. So, sure.
Sure, okay.
Episode 2.
All right, so we've gone through the what in episode 1, season 2, and we just spoke about the why. Now, how do you know? How do you know that you can accomplish it, do it in whatever way you want, just like Whitney Houston? How do you know? How do you know?
Amazing.
It's a good song.
I don't know the song.
Oh, it will be playing.
Okay, good.
It will be playing in this podcast.
Good. Yeah. I'll try and over the background now. But you never know. Like the you know, to have certainty that you can do something you've never done before, but you can believe. Oh my God, that sounded like a start of a Disney movie, didn't it? It's like you never know, but you can believe in yourself. So there's a bunch of. I mean, going back to your example before, so your trail running ultra friend who's never run a road marathon before,
when you're just switching up context a little bit, you can be pretty confident. Like, so, you know, he's run 100K, going to a road marathon, okay, he might not smash it, it might be boring, whatever, whatever, but he's probably going to finish. And same thing for me, you know, I've done, you know, Ironman triathlon, so doing a doing an adventure race for 4 hours wasn't particularly scary. So there's that kind of difference where you're just switching up context, but when it's completely out of the realm of anything you've put your body through before, so for me this time that falls into that category, it's running 100 kilometers, the most I've ever run is 50 on the same course. So this is very different. So while I can't know, there's a bunch of signals you can pay attention to that give you a good indication. I guess you can benchmark against folk who've done it before for the first time. So, you know, following training programs from people who've coached athletes to do the event before can give you a good amount of certainty. So if you're following a training program that, you know, 100 people have done to great success running their first 100, then that can give you a degree of certainty. But at the end of the day, you have to go off blind faith a little bit, I think, that you can do it. And, you know, that leads into some interesting questions, I guess, about mental conditioning and how you frame the race and how you treat your mind leading in.
So Phil, did you thinking you would know and not know help you know if you would finish?
No. No, clearly not. I wasn't a million miles from the mark. I think I was, you know, within a degree of tolerance of error, like over the, close enough to a guesstimate about what I would do. I wasn't like thinking I would do under 14 hours and then ended up at 20. You know, I was thinking I might do under 14 hours and end up at 14 and a half. So
pretty good.
It was, yeah, close enough. So yeah, you never know, but you can kind of, you know, put a sort of marker there to some extent.
Cool. Yeah. I applaud anyone doing race like that. Marathon fucks me up because you actually can't do the marathon distance in your training runs. Sorry, as far as like marathoners, like at that speed.
At the speed, definitely not. Yeah.
I know you did over 42Ks for your long runs, but
yeah.
You get into that 50-60K territory. Even our guest from the professional
Anna Marie.
She's not doing 100K runs to train for.
You know what? I wouldn't be shocked if she was. She's a beast.
I think she said it. She said she, no, she doesn't do anything more than 60.
No, yeah. No, so, I don't think so.
It doesn't make me feel comfortable to do only do 60% of the distance. Mm. So for you to know based on, you know, previous training and your experience and research, which I call my discovery process, which we'll go into in the near future.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. Congrats, dude. Props.
Yeah.
Kudos, as Strava would say.
Oh, yeah. I was happy enough with the guess.
Episode 3.
So in terms of gear, like I'm training with a backpack as well. So I'm running with my backpack with like filled with like race equipment as well. So I'm simulating that. So that's not new on race day and doesn't cause me any weird untoward issues and problems. Stability is a massive thing as well. As I said, you're running on trails. They're fairly dangerous. I've fallen over in trail races, you know, numerous times and never done anything serious. But, you know, if you kind of fall on a rock in a wrong fashion, it's quite easy to twist an ankle or break something. So as well as the kind of usual strength training I'm doing a lot more stability training. So this is kind of balance. It's standing on one leg, like moving a kettlebell around myself. It's doing standing on one leg punches. It's doing a lot more plyometrics, so jumping exercises and things of that nature, just to get stability and strength in those areas up to where it needs to be for the race. Because this is one reason I recommend trail running for Ironman athletes as well, because simulating what you're going to feel like in the last 10K of a Ironman marathon, when your body starts breaking down, your muscles start breaking down, and you start having to recruit muscle groups that you just haven't done in training before because you haven't been to that place. Very similar to trail running as well over this sort of distance. I'm going to be, you know, my body's going to start calling on muscles that I just haven't in training. So that's why strength training, cross training, and stability training are so fundamental and important to that as well. So that's the kind of package that I'm mainly focusing on at the moment.
So did any of that, the, you know, being prepared with the gear and the backpack and running with all that and the one-legged kettlebell passing between your legs like a basketball NBA player,
sure.
Did that help you? Did that actually help? Do you want to do more of that in the future, less of that?
I think that was one of the aspects that was the stability and the gear testing and stuff that worked really, really well. So gear, no problems, no chafing. You know what? One tiny blister on the like near the back of my heel that I didn't even notice during the race.
Impressive.
No toenails missing, no chafing. Upper body felt fine. Yeah, so the gear all worked and functioned as it should. So all of that, super happy with. Shout out to all of the equipment manufacturers that I bought shit off. So that was all fine. And then in terms of stability stuff, yeah. No rolled ankles, no wobbles in that respect. I mean, the muscular endurance thing for the downhill running again is the one caveat there. But I think that's a running thing, I don't think more strength and conditioning would have helped there. I think that was a lack of downhill run training. So again, I'll kind of caveat that. But the rest of it, I was happy with. Yeah. So the stability work, I'd definitely do again. And I think I did it in about the right amount as well. Because there's only so much you really want to do and detract from sport-specific stuff.
It was that meme from Ultra Running Memes. It was I just put it in our Instagram stories. And it was like, it had a, what's his name? The Phil? No, what's the guy's name? The old man?
Hide the Pain Harold.
Yeah, Hide the Pain Harold. And it was like all those crunches and ab work that you're reading about. Like, you know, really doesn't help you run faster, you know, at the end of the day. And to run faster or better, you need to run.
Yes.
So,
Episode 4.
Because hypermobile sounds like it would be good. Because I don't know, maybe that's just, you know, the language we're conditioned to in society. Oh, you're hypermobile. Well, shit, that's better than regular mobile.
Yeah. It's got to be, right? It's
yeah.
Except that it's sort of, you get less protection from your joints, I guess.
Okay.
And also takes a lot longer for your ligaments to realize, because you get your proprioceptors are in your ligaments. So those are cells in your body which tell you when your joint is rolling one direction. So where your joints are in space.
Yeah.
So if you're about to roll your ankle, you just get that little bit of time delay where you don't feel it going. And then that can be enough just to make you go all the way.
Mm.
Whereas we, with the stiff people, we know straight away. And so our muscles click on and they correct us.
Right.
So
very cool. That would explain my, because I've always been told I'm really tight. I need to stretch more, but I don't roll ankles.
Yeah.
And I have really good balance.
Yeah.
Like I can like I'm like twitching. I know no one can see this right now, but that makes sense.
So that's really good for trail running. Like obviously you're on unstable surfaces the whole time.
Yeah. But it is up to a point, obviously, because if you're really stiff, then you also can't accommodate for the different terrain and the different heights and all that sort of thing. And you don't have as much spring in your joints as well. So you know, there is a point, there's a nice middle ground which you are in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's good. But there are some people who are extremely stiff and they will get other things like, they might just get cramping and problems with imbalances in terms of like one joint might be really much more stiff than the other, and that can play a part. Yeah.
So this is more of a recent one. Good old Paula Luke, the body fixer. Shout outs. Go see her if you are a triathlete in the Sydney area, because she's dope and she fixes Phil all the time. So did her general advice. I love that clip. Obviously, you couldn't play the whole. I mean, we could play. Go and listen to the whole episode.
Yeah,
if you haven't.
Go back and listen to it.
Or just listen to it again. We know everyone has all the time in the world. But, you know, that I loved that kind of epiphany of, oh, wow, you want to be a bit stiff and not too flexible, especially for, you know, the type of sport that we do.
Yeah.
You know, did her general advice help you?
Yeah, absolutely.
And just what she's been doing, do you feel like that was that was definitely, I mean, this is a pretty unanimous.
Oh yeah. I mean, a couple of things, went to see her sort of on the preventative side, cause I had had Achilles problems in the past. So I went to see her kind of proactively. It's like, hey, how does everything kind of look and feel down there? Do I, you know, but
you had that toe thing. We didn't talk about that.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about that actually.
Did we not?
I don't think we did. I can't remember.
So I had, so during the Jabalani.
Maybe we did.
Well, whatever. We'll say it again. But during the Jabalani challenge, which was a kind of 48, I don't know, whatever, kilometer race, just outside of Sydney. Weird pain in like the kind of like on the bottom of my foot. And it wasn't like acute. It wasn't like I just stabbed it on a rock or something like that.
You thought you broke your toe.
I thought I could have.
You were like, dude, I broke my toe. I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
I was like, that's harsh, man.
It was pretty painful. And what it turned out to be after Paula kind of prodded around and kind of found the thing was, because I had I've got what's called Morton's toe, which basically means the toe next to my big toe is like kind of freakily long. Like it's longer than it should be.
The hook toe, right?
Yeah, whatever the second toe is from. It's not like I'm a raptor or anything, but it's longer than it should be. And what was happening was, if you can imagine, it's kind of pushing up against the end of my shoes and kind of bending, and that bending is putting pressure on the metatarsal. So just behind the ball of my foot, like that's where there was some inflammation. So it wasn't torn, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't broke, there was nothing broken, but it was inflamed back there. So she gave me these metatarsal domes to put in my shoe, which fixed it out. I got some new running shoes, so I swapped out the ones that I was using, which had done me fine, but I think just the volume I was doing, again, it's that that chronic sort of injury when you're doing a lot of something and you've got a little thing that's wrong. You know, if I was just doing 10k training and doing, you know, maybe 50k a week, 40k a week of running, like I don't think that would have been a problem, or it hasn't been in the past, but for this kind of volume, like clearly it flared. She fixed that. Paula in general is great. So yeah, I listened to her advice and I was injury free for the race.
Boom.
Episode 5.
And when you come into the aid stations and Michelle and I are there, what do you want us to do, or what do you want us not to do?
Don't be cheerleaders. I don't need encouragement. I don't know what I want you to do. I don't know that I need anybody there. Interview me, get some sound for the podcast. That's kind of it. Like, yeah, I'm not the sort. I think I'm such a mismatcher that when people are like, oh, you're doing well, you're smashing it, my mind's just like, shut up, no, I'm not. Like, so yeah, no encouragement, just how are you feeling? Ask questions more than anything. So don't assume I want anything. Just ask, do you need anything? Do you want anything? And if I do, I'll tell you. That'd be honestly the best and most helpful thing.
All right, so Phil, it's a three-parter. And we're nearing the end of this episode. So I now somehow have a cold. And I sound slightly different. I'm just going to point that one out.
I'm wearing a different t-shirt. I've had a haircut.
Got a big beard now. Yeah. What did you learn from that race? Because we've just listened to the whole season. Kind of, we recapped it, you know, the highlights and kind of going, did that prove to be true, a hypothesis and all that?
Yeah.
What did you learn from the whole season? Like, if you sum it up in one or two sentences, what do you think you, like, what'd you get out of it?
I still made assumptions which turned out to not be true about the training and racing. So, not doing enough downhills. So, I assumed that would be fine. Turns out wasn't. So making assumptions, test as many of them as you can, I think is the main lesson there. Running 100 kilometers is kind of boring. That was lesson number two.
Yeah, you talked about that earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was it.
That was it?
That was it, all yeah. Right.
Well, here, I'll go a bit deeper. To someone that's, you know, listening and they might be interested or they have done, you know, an Ironman or a marathon where they spend 3 months, 6 months, a year. For me, it was 4 years training for a marathon.
Sure.
Broke it up, obviously, in multiple parts. When you finally reach that objective goal, whatever, you finish the thing or whatever you want to do. What's next? Like, how do you plan for what's next? Is that where they need to go back to episode one, season one, and then they need to go to the last episode, stoicism? Is that fear setting? Is that a thing?
I think they definitely should go and listen to Good Goals, episode one, season one.
I'm thinking. Side note.
Sure.
I'm thinking that we need to like do the V2 version of Good Goals.
Yeah.
Moving forward.
Yeah.
I think it'll be actually cool.
I think so too.
Which will just be us playing it backwards though.
I've got some more thinking on goal setting now.
Same.
But
So how does someone set themselves up to not feel like, oh my God, I'm hollow, I have nothing to work for, I have nothing to live for.
Sure.
Those first few weeks post Ironman, post marathon, post ultra race.
Okay, well, for a start, if all you are having to live for is training for a Ironman or an ultra race, you need to go to a park bench, a really lonely, sad one, and have a cry.
He doesn't mean that. We support you, and email us if you have issues because we can get you proper help.
I'm 100% joking. It may not sound like it.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. You don't have like the fun, laughy voice like me. Like,
no.
You just sound straight deadpan, and it's like, Phil wants me to like do harm to myself.
That is the furthest thing from true. No, I would personally advise a little bit of space from the race. So don't go into setting goals while you're still on the kind of post-race euphoria wave. So I would give it at least a few days, a week, or enough time for you to get some distance from what you just did.
Yeah, there's actually the theory. Sorry to interrupt, but there's a theory of like before you analyze it, give yourself some space, right?
Yeah,
yeah. So don't even plan like even the analyzation. Don't analyze the minute you're done with the race. Look at your Strava, splits and all that, right?
Yeah, for sure. And people have a tendency, especially if they didn't achieve the goal that they wanted to like dive in and sign up for another one straight away. The amount of Ironman athletes I've seen do that, like they don't qualify for Kona and then they'll just go and sign up for the next available Ironman.
Yep.
That happens. Yep. So I would advise not doing that. Take some space and then honestly just go through what the next meaningful thing is for you. Like it's kind of simple, like one doesn't have to follow on from the other. So this is the sunk cost fallacy, because I haven't run much in the last like 4 weeks. Like I've been lifting weights.
We're saying time. Ooh,
what's that?
We keep our shit evergreen, bro. We don't talk time.
Okay, whatever. But
you said you get jacked.
You got traps? No, but just because it's fun. It's fun. Yeah, like it's fun for me at the moment. Like I'm not really thinking about it too much. I'm just having like a literal, 4 weeks, 5 weeks of like off season, just doing some weights and mucking about. I'm still running, but am I obsessed with maintaining the huge base volume that got me to 100K? No, I couldn't care less. So that's the other thing. People don't want to let go of the fitness they had. They don't want to let go of that like super Ironman, beast fitness. And so they'll carry on training for triathlon, even though they might be done with it. Like, so the sunk cost fallacy, I think, is huge. And then just go through usual goal setting. Like, is it meaningful to you? Is it ecological? All the rest of it. Five whys. Yeah. Like, why are you doing it? No, seriously, why are you doing it? And why is that important to you? And why is that meaningful to you? Just have a dig in and think what's next. I think it's great to have goals and something to direct your energy to and a dragon to slay. So, but just give yourself some space from the first dragon. Don't think that the first dragon has anything to do with the next dragon.
We're not talking about Daenerys Targaryen.
And then don't get your dragon shot by those scorpion things, which in one episode were like the most lethal thing to dragons on the earth. And then the next one, they were like Nerf guns for some reason. Great writing, guys.
And it never hit the one that she was riding.
Hey, remember when Jon Snow's dragon just stopped helping at the Battle of Winterfell? Fucking Game of Thrones.
So yeah, you know what actually is a good example, because I'm all about the practical tactical. A good example is if you go and read Mark Allen, if you go read Iron War, probably read one of his books that Mark Allen may have written or someone's written about him. So from October, mid-October, early October, whatever Iron Man is done,
yeah,
till January 1 for, I think, 8 or 9 years, however long he's pro,
yeah,
he would literally do no type of triathlon training.
Yeah.
No specific. He would just surf.
Yeah.
All fucking awesome. Day because he could. He didn't probably have to work. I don't know. And he would hang out with his family, eat whatever he wanted. He would turn off for literally almost 12 weeks, 3 months.
Yep.
And come back in and do base for 3 or 4 months of Moffitt-toed low heart rate training.
Sure.
And, you know, kind of like, you know, if you keep up with it, you should start higher than where you started the season before. Or the phase before, you should start slightly higher.
Sure.
Like, you obviously not be exactly with tip top, but you'll be slightly ahead.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, you're going to be slightly ahead, and then, you know, obviously you compound the years that happens. But yeah, that's just do some fun shit. If you're like me and Phil, where you can't just sit around, no one should ever sit around for longer than a few weeks after a big event, because it's just unhealthy.
A few days, like, just move, even walk, yoga, like, just,
yeah,
like,
even, but yeah, if you want to just turn off for a week or two, that's fine. But after that, just for your general health, just do the exact opposite of play fucking. If you play basketball 20 years ago, play basketball again.
Yeah.
You know, like soccer or whatever.
Try something new. Use it as a window to just like pick up a new sport and see if you like it.
Absolutely. So the last thing is, what are you doing then as far as, it's a good segue to maintenance. I know that you said you're trying to finally break sub 40 minute 10K. You're getting into my territory. You're running fast and short. Easy.
Yeah.
Easy. So what's going on? How are you? How are you doing it?
I'll do that. I think I'll follow a pretty basic, like Matt Fitzgerald 80-20 training protocol for 10K. So 20% VO2 max kind of stuff, lots of sprints, and then 80% kind of you know, more zone 2 endurance training, and then supplement that just with you know, some cycling for fun. And like, honestly, I'm quite enjoying lifting weights and just being in the gym. Just because I've always liked doing it. I just find it really satisfying. I really like lifting weights.
Yeah.
Just, I'm not bothered. I don't want to get huge. Like, yeah. I just really enjoy like squats and deadlifts and stuff. So I'm doing that because I can.
Same. Yeah. I'm the same. Like, whatever the off season right now, I've been pretty much my off season for a couple of reasons, but, I'm just maintaining at the gym, and if I decide to do, I usually do 2 sets.
Yeah.
For maintenance, 3 sets is kind of to either build power or strength or
sure.
Well, I never try to bulk, but I might go and do that 3rd set. I do some random hit 30 seconds of push-ups and pull-ups. Jesus. Totally different. Like, I actually like how, like, you know, in my head, I'm like, oh, 30 seconds of push-ups, that's nothing. Salt Bae. Yeah, absolutely. There's a Salt Bae meme. I know you can't see it, and just, we might link it, but...
just making up intervals.
I'm literally making up my intervals. Same, like, same. It's like, I go like, ooh, I might jump rope over here and do some side lunges over here. And,
my new favorite made-up interval at the moment is battle ropes, then deadlifts. So there's battle ropes at the gym, nice. Which I love them. Like, I think they're so much fun. So I've been using the battle ropes and then go into to a hex bar deadlift.
Nice. Dude, hex is the shit, man.
It's the fucking shit.
You know, you could actually, side rant, we're going to end this episode, but you could actually, if you only have one thing and you have very limited space in your house, the hex bar deadlift does so much shit.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a squat rack, you can't put a squat rack in your house, the hex bar deadlift is the thing, because you could obviously deadlift with it.
Yeah.
You could do calf raises. You could do squats.
Yeah.
There's like 10 other exercises you could do with that damn thing. I would
buy one of it. Yeah. Like beyond kettlebells, I still think for a full body workout in a space sensitive home, like a couple of kettlebells.
Fair. Because you could, with kettlebells, you could do hit. I just like to just put the weight on and just do some deep squats.
Yeah.
Just get it in. Like, you can't get that with a kettlebell, but.
No, true. But that hex bar is amazing.
Yeah. I think it goes kettlebell and then hex bar.
For home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Thank you, Phil, for using your story and you as a guinea pig to create a narrative sequence of episodes. I've been wanting to do that for a while, and thank you for giving yourself up for that.
Yeah, it was more uncomfortable than the race.
hated talking about himself.
My British sensibilities were offended pretty much every episode. But hopefully you all learned from my stupidity. That's the true meaning of Christmas.
It was great, man. You did something really cool. I feel like my half marathon story may have fallen a bit flat.
You went fast. You went fast. You achieved your goal. You didn't fail like I did.
You didn't fail, bro. All right.
I'm not saying it's bad, but you know.
And we're jerking each other up again. Yeah. Is it a circle jerk?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Just to finish off the episode.
I love
strong.
You. I love you too. Love me. So yeah, man. Thank you again for doing it. Congratulations. If you don't know, that was a narrative of sorts, a hybrid of sorts, to where we had a succinct kind of idea in the beginning of the season to tell a story over the course of 6 episodes. And moving forward, we actually have some more experimental cool shit. We're going to try a bunch of really different shit.
Yeah.
More narrative exploration, probably a bunch more production going into it. And I don't want to give away exactly what we're going to do because we might not do it that way. But get ready for just a shit ton of like cool audio.
Yeah. Two shits or zero fucks.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll end it with that. Go back and listen to the first episode, Good Goals, because
we peaked then. That was depresses me every time I think about it. It's like really was the best episode we've done.
It's a good episode, yeah. And then go listen to Stoicism, because I'm just big on Stoicism these days. So you can
bad.
You can follow up goal setting with fear setting.
Yeah.
You know, like just do that. Just go back and forth.
And then go listen to all the episodes with our friends and guests.
Yeah.
Go listen to Emo, go listen to Paula, go listen to Anna Marie.
Exactly. They were all awesome. This feels like, you know, like the end of the SNL episodes where like they're playing the music and everyone's like hugging.
Yeah, okay.
Like I feel like one of those. You know, the end
Night,
you know?
Jim Bob, like, or the end of like what was that show? Little House on the Prairie.
I'm gonna do a slow fade out on this, but yeah, I'm gonna come in and do my narration and tell you to listen to my music and subscribe. So do it. Peace, everyone. See y'all.
And that's it. As always, we really appreciate you taking the time to listen to us ramble about shit that we think you could find of interest and that we found of interest and hopefully help everyone out there. Again, please subscribe, rate, comment, and share on whatever you use to listen to us. If you have any questions or concerns or even suggestions for episodes, or hell, if you want to be on the show, hit us up on the socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or talk some shit at masterofsumpod.com. If you like any of the music that you heard this episode, please feel free to add it to whatever device on whatever platform you use, Spotify, Apple Music, or SoundCloud. Just go to masterofsumpod.com/music and share with all the folks that you think would like it. Don't worry if you didn't get that. There's a link in the show notes. Thank you so much. Peace. Just.